Welcome back to the Centre Pass podcast brought to you by Netball Draft Central. My name is Sophie Taylor and as always I'm joined by Taylor Melky. How's it going, Tay?
Yeah, I'm super good today. We are both in our dressing gowns and hoodies, nice and casual. You know, you can't do anything. Can't do too much in lockdown, so we thought we may as well have our own little pyjama party while we talk about the netball. And there was plenty of that action that happened over the weekend, so we are in for a great episode.
Yeah, definitely. Well, one of the big things that happened this morning we'll quickly touch on is that Sherelle McMahon is sadly stepping down from her position as the assistant coach of the Melbourne Vixens. Devastating for people like me. Obviously, she's been around for about 25 years in the Victorian pathways and systems with everything. I mean, I don't really need to explain Sherelle McMahon. She's taken up post at Cricket Victoria. She's going to be the head of female cricket, and I have no doubt she's going to be amazing at that. Obviously, we know what she's done for the growth of netball, so no doubt having her as a head in female cricket is going to do wonders for the sport.
It's a really exciting move for her. It's a disappointing one for the Vixens. They will be lost without her because she has been such a pillar in that Vixens cohort for so many years, whether she was playing or now taking up that coaching role. So it's going to be interesting to see how they move forward, but also what a great get for Cricket Victoria. So good luck to her, and I'm sure she'll somehow make her way back to netball. I don't think she'll be done with it just yet.
Yeah, I don't think she'll be too far away, but we might go straight into this week's SSN action. Obviously, we had the first round of finals over the weekend. There was the major semi-final between the Giants and Swifts, which the Swifts came away with a one-goal victory. And then we had the minor semi, or the elimination final, between the Fever and the Lightning. The Lightning got really close, but then the Fever just beat them in that last quarter. We'll look at the first game first. I think that makes sense. The Giants really put the Swifts under the pump in that last quarter, but the Swifts were just too good in the end.
It was a really, really interesting battle between the Giants and the Swifts. For me, the Giants started really slow, and you cannot afford to do that against someone like the Swifts, who are a team that build off confidence. And with the confidence riding high in that opening quarter, it was always going to be extremely hard for the Giants to peg them back. And while they did a great job and they got ever so close, it was those missed opportunities that they will really be rueing, those early mistakes and just those little bit of jitters to start things off.
Yeah, definitely. The thing that I think the Giants let get away from them too early was the Helen Housby impact, because Housby hasn't necessarily been having the greatest season. We've touched on that a few times on the podcast already this year, but she shot 7 of 8 goals in the first quarter, and she was allowed to do that because that defensive pressure was so focused on Sam Wallace. And obviously Sam Wallace, you have to keep an eye on her. You cannot deny her that space. But Housby, even when she's not putting up shots, she's still playmaking and playing a really significant role. And the fact that she was allowed to put up shots on top of that just allowed her to absolutely wreak havoc in that opening quarter.
One thing that I found particularly interesting was, as you touched on there, Soph, the fact that Housby was allowed to run freely, but the fact that April Branley was kind of caught in no man's land quite a few times, and we haven't necessarily seen that from her throughout this season. She's really been able to negate her goal attack and have a really clear structure, and she got pinned a couple of times early for some contacts with just having her arms out and things like that. So it was almost as if she knew what she had to do to try and stop Helen Housby, but she didn't also have that capacity to do it, if that makes sense. Like, she was caught in two minds on whether or not to double back on Wallace and provide that real extra presence down back, or to stop Housby. And then in the end, she was unable to have that usual impact that we have come to know in season 2021. But that's not to say that the Giants didn't pick up the pace as the game went on. You look at the second quarter and they slowly started to turn things around. You know, they scored 16 goals to 14, and then in the third it was 20 to 15, so they had that capacity to do damage. And one player that just continues to amaze me is Sophie Dwyer, 19 years of age, and she was as cool as a cucumber under the post for the Giants, especially because Joe Harton, you could see at the start, her gameplay was very different to what we had seen the previous week. The previous week when they were playing the Fever, she adopted this really great movement and kind of didn't allow the defenders to set up on her. This week, she tried to play more of a body-on-body role, and that almost negatively impacted the Giants because they weren't able to create that space.
Yeah, Jo Harden was an interesting one for me because she had these really, really great patches of brilliance, especially during those second and third quarters, which the Giants did win. But it just wasn't there for the entire game, and that's where they kind of fell short, because obviously Dwyer is more than capable of putting up goals, but she ended up, I think it was a 67% accuracy, 66.7, 18 goals from 27 attempts. It's not the most accurate. And although the Giants did end up picking up quite a few rebounds, that's not enough in the scheme of things. You need to be shooting those goals. You can't afford to be missing. And so the Giants in the end almost had to revert to the super shot, which they weren't really doing early on in the game. And now I look at the at the score flow on Champion Data, and it's kind of a little bit 50-50 there, really. But it was just, yeah, it was a bizarre game to watch for the Giants, because as close as they kept getting, it just didn't look like it would ever be enough. And the Swifts, to their credit, they did not let up throughout the entire 60 minutes, although they came out firing and weren't quite able to get back to that form. They didn't necessarily dip. And that's what I think was really notable. There were some intriguing changes throughout the court for the Swifts. I thought that early on, Taylor Fraser was doing a really good job of negating Maddie Hay. And that was what was really clear in the first quarter and probably the early stages of the second quarter before she ended up being taken off the court. I thought it was really interesting because even though Fraser wasn't necessarily stopping Hay from getting the ball, she was stopping her from getting it where she wanted to. And she was really causing errors in that second phase of attack. And it was a bit strange to see someone like Lauren Moore come on. And obviously Moore had an immediate impact. I think she got an intercept within moments of taking the court. But it really opened up the space for the Giants because Hay was able to dictate what she was doing again. So there were some interesting coaching decisions in there. I was kind of wondering whether the Swifts were almost trying to rest some players on the off chance that they'd have to go into the second round of finals. Fortunately, they don't. And also fortunately for Maddie Proud, who was taken off the court in the last probably 2 minutes of the game with a potential concussion. I don't know. I think it was ruled out once she got off the court. But I mean, regardless of whether there's a concussion there, that's still a head injury, and she didn't look right coming off the court. So it'll be good for the Swifts to have a week off between games.
Yeah, just touching on that Taylor Fraser move, I too found that quite interesting because the structure that the Swifts seem to have with Taylor Fraser on the court just looks a lot more freer, if that makes sense. She provides that drive not only in defense, but so through to in attack. And sometimes we have seen that both Paige Hadley and Maddie Proud can get a little bit caught, and then Taylor Fraser is able to provide that real injection of speed. So having Lauren Moore on really, as you touched on, Soph, opened things up for the Giants, because Maddie Hay for me in that first half was really struggling. She looked really labored, and the movement for the Giants as a whole was really tricky. You could see that Jamie Lee Price was about having to take just about every second pass to even get the ball moving into attack. But then once that shift happened, things started to tick along a lot better for the Giants. So it's going to be interesting to see if that's a move the Swifts do once again, whether or not Fraser gets the nod in wing defense and then they have someone like Lauren Moore come on. But for the Giants this week, it's going to be very interesting because they didn't make any changes. Oh, I think maybe I take that back. They had Tilly McDonald come on for the second half, and I was really excited by that, to be perfectly honest. I think she provided that really good aerial presence, and she might not have won a heap of ball, but she did really spark the side up. So that's something that they'll be eager to continue, but they didn't make a whole heap of changes, so they're going to have to front up again this week, and then if they win and then play finals, it'll be interesting to see how they all fare.
Yeah, it's interesting. The McDonald factor kind of confused me as well. It was another change that I was kind of looking at going, I don't know whether that's the change I would have made, because realistically, the player that was wreaking havoc, although Sam Wallace was piling on the goals. She finished with 45 from 48, and two of those misses were super shot attempts. But even though she was shooting that great volume, it was actually Housby that was running absolutely wild. And I would have liked to actually see Christiana Manoa. We know the impact she can have, and I've never necessarily been the greatest fan of her defensive game, but she proved over the last week against the Fever when April Brandley was out with injury that she is more than capable of doing exactly what Brandley does, and she can switch up her game within a matter of moments. So I would have actually really liked to see that change made in the defensive end rather than the goalkeeper change, because I thought Sam Pullman was doing a solid job, not an amazing job, because obviously Wallace is a really hard player to take on. But yeah, I thought Pullman was actually doing a really good job of kind of negating that easy space over to her.
See, I think the reason for the change was more so to create doubt in the feeders' minds, because McDonald is one of those attacking types of players that she is willing to go out hunting. And we've seen that time and time again where she has that real injection and that real excitement factor. And I think from the Giants' perspective, that was almost what they needed. They needed a shift in energy out on court, and McDonald provided that. And she was able to just shake things up and almost cause the Swifts to hesitate to think about things that is going to happen out on court. But all in all, it's going to be very interesting to see what happens next week. And full credit to the Swifts, they were able to grind out this game and stood strong, because it got very, very tight, especially when those super shots started flying in those last few minutes. I think I and just about every other fan was sitting on the edge of our seats going, oh gosh, is this the time the super shot is going to have a huge impact and completely change the course of the game?
Yeah, well, I was kind of sitting there going, do I want the Swifts to win because I love the whole team, or do I want the Giants to win for Joe Harden? And it was kind of 50-50. Fortunately, the Giants have a second chance this week. They will take on the Fever. We'll go into the second game now, which was the Fever defeating the Lightning 75-67. Although the Lightning really took it to them in that third quarter, they were only trailing by two heading into the last. It just wasn't enough in this match. The Fever just kicked it up a gear completely in that last quarter.
It was another case of a slow start, and we've said that time and time again with the Fever, is that you can't give them any margin. Even if it's a goal, they somehow just find this way and have this energy and aura about them that any lead is a great lead, and they have this capacity to build on it. And as you touched on, Soph, the fact that the Lightning got so close in the second quarter was full credit to their ability to take it up to them. But then the Fever just proved that anything you can do, I can do better. And just absolutely dominated in that final term. 21 goals to 15. They are just such a well-rounded team. And it's gotten to the stage now where we used to say, if you shut down that midcourt of the Fever, the likes of Jess Anstis and Verity Charles, then, you know, you're going to stop the Fever. But you can't even do that now, because there are game winners, or match winners, I should say, across each and every position. The likes of Sasha Glasgow has really come into her own again. Alice Teague-Neild has upped the ante a bit more, which she needed to do to ensure that the Fever continued this upwards trajectory. And then defensively, Sunday Ariang, what is she, 19 and just absolutely dominating out on court? I don't know about you, but when I was 19, I was not doing that. But it's just a real testament to what the Fever can produce. And unfortunate for the Lightning, but if you look at it from a holistic point of view, for the Lightning, this is their fifth year, their fifth finals campaign, and that's no easy feat.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just touching on what you were saying about Sunday Ariang, she had an amazing start to this game. She made it so that it was her defensive end. Courtney Bruce didn't have the best game. She still finished off with, I think it was 8 gains. 8 gains and 3 intercepts. So on paper, it doesn't look like she had a quiet game, but she didn't look comfortable all game. It was almost like Kara Konen and Steph Wood. Their connection was making her unable to kind of dictate what was going to happen in that goaling end. And even though the Fever did win, it wasn't that Bruce was being a dominant force. It was that the rest of the court was like had stepped up its game, if that makes sense. Something really notable is that there were very similar penalty counts, 55 for the Fever, 52 for the Lightning, and 19 general play turnovers each. But 8 of those turnovers for the Lightning came off Mahalia Cassidy. Now, when you've got someone like Jess Anstis who will pounce on any ball, regardless of which player is there, you cannot afford to be letting go of that ball through the midcourt. And I think that really was the difference in this game. The Lightning were fairly strong up forward. It was a little bit shaky from Steph Wood at the beginning, but that's kind of expected when she's been out with an injury for the last week. She missed quite a few early shots in that first half. I don't think she missed as many in the last quarter. But yeah, it was really, really interesting the way that the midcourt of the Fever, it's so much about shutting them down that you forget that what they're able to do when they're in transition down the court and in that defensive kind of mind. Obviously, Stacey Francis-Bayman is such an impressive defender in the way that she can also pounce on the ball, but she's also a flyer. There's all these different things that you have to factor in with the Fever in the midcourt rather than just those two posts in Janelle Fowler, who we haven't even touched on yet. She fired off 54 goals from 55 attempts. Like, it was just ridiculous. And it wasn't even like the Lightning were doing a bad job defensively. The Fever were just better overall.
Well, one thing I will touch on is the fact that I think for me this season, the Achilles heel of the Lightning has been their midcourt. It's been that level of inconsistency, whereas you look at the Fever and they have just a plethora of options and each and every one of them have their own strength. And that's not to say that the Lightning don't have their own strength, but they are really clinical with ball in hand and with having two pillars like Janelle Fowler at one end and Courtney Bruce at the other. The Fever have really structured up nicely and they've all got their own role that they play out on court. We know that Verity Charles has swung back into that wing attack role and she looks really at home there and is really comfortable to release that high looping pass into Fowler. It doesn't matter where she is across the court, she still does it. She racked up 28 goal assists, which is just ridiculous, especially considering she's coming up against, you know, some well-rounded and well-experienced Lightning players, whether it be Maddie McAuliffe or anything like that. So she had strong opposition but was still able to just go about her business in a cool, calm and collected manner. And for me, that has been the growth for the Fever this season, is their ability to actually lower their eyes, calm everything down, and then push forward. Glasgow and Alice Teague-Neild were once again really strong. They both played roles that they needed to play, if that makes sense. And for the Fever, it's just the fact that they have so many threats across the court that it's going to be very interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, definitely. I kind of questioned the Sasha Glasgow change when she first came on. Teague-Neild started off really strong and she was worrying the Lightning at the beginning because they were focusing so much on Fowler. They weren't paying attention to Teague-Neild and all of a sudden she's popping up goals from every which way, regardless of what period it was in the quarter. She didn't care if it wasn't the super shot period. She was taking the shots from that long distance and she was really, really worrying the defenders. And so I was a little bit confused when they took her off and put Glasgow on. I think it was during the third quarter. And it just seemed like a bit of an odd decision. Glasgow didn't necessarily have, actually, like in the last game, I'm pretty sure she got an intercept as soon as she took the court. But regardless of that, she didn't actually have a huge, huge impact. And even in that last quarter, I don't think she had a significant impact either. She ended up with more goal assists and less goals compared to Teague-Neild's more goals and only two less goal assists. It's kind of a much of a muchness. But I thought Teague-Neild was doing a really good job of worrying the Lightning. And they kind of lost that later. But I guess that doesn't really matter when they still came away with a win.
Well, I wonder if they did that just to keep the legs fresh, because they knew that if, for example, they needed to make that change and shift Teague-Neild back on, that was an option that they had. But also looking ahead to next week, let's be real, we know that Teague-Neild is 9 times out of 10 going to get the start over Sasha Glasgow, because that is the preferred partnership. The two have a really solid connection in Fowler and Teague-Neild. So I wonder if maybe that shift was just to alleviate a little bit of pressure off Teague-Neild and then use her for a full game potentially this week. There is so much player management that has to happen these days. And, you know, with also Diamonds camps coming up soon, it's going to be very interesting to see how all of these players manage.
Yeah, definitely. Well, we'll touch on that next game. It's on Saturday, I'm fairly certain. Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. on, I'm assuming it will be on free-to-air TV unless something goes really wrong. It's the Giants and the Fever. Should be a fascinating game. We only saw them play a few weeks ago. Both teams have won one game each this season. The Giants certainly have the more recent form with that win. But we know exactly what the Fever can do, and it should be a really tight physical battle.
My key matchup, I think, that I'm going to be keeping a keen eye on is going to be the contest between Verity Charles and Amy Parmenter. This is going to be the game changer. If Verity Charles is able to get over the top of Parmenter, then it's going to go a long way for the Fever to really claim that ascendancy. But we've seen just how strong Parmy can be. She is a real terrier. She likes to get down and dirty. She likes to go out screaming for those huge intercepts. So that's going to be one real key matchup across the court. So do you have one that you've been keeping a keen eye on?
I was originally thinking JLP versus Anstis, but I think in this scenario, they often end up cancelling each other out. They play a similar role. So I think the matchup that I'd be looking towards is the one between Joe Harton and Courtney Bruce. There's no love lost between those two. Both are phenomenal players in their own right. And I think that's it. Whoever is able to get that early confidence up is going to be that game changer there, because Courtney Bruce, when she's on, her entire team lifts around her. When Joe Harton is on, she just steps up and goes all out, and the rest of the team can't help but build off that too. So there's so much potential in this matchup, and same with the matchup that you mentioned all across the court. It's going to be so exciting to see, and I'm really, really fascinated by this match.
Yeah, when Joe Harton fires up, I'm sitting on the couch at home ready to go into battle for her, because you can just see the passion on her face. There is just nothing but sheer love for the sport, and it's just so infectious. So it could be really interesting to see which way that contest goes.
Absolutely. Well, we'll head off the court again now and quickly touch on a few changes that have happened over the last few days in netball, really. First off, we had Kylie Byrne re-sign for the Lightning for another 2 years as head coach. They've been around for 5 years, five finals. Byrne has been at the helm for 2 years of those finals. Haven't made grand finals, but I think you can factor in the whole pandemic thing and plenty of changes across the team into that. The other big change or big announcement this week was that Nicole Richardson has signed back on for the Collingwood Magpies.
I think that's going to be a really good thing for Collingwood. I think in the past they've had a little bit of inconsistency with player movements, coach changes and all that. So it's going to be great to see Richo stick around. And to be honest, we've also seen just the growth from the Collingwood Magpies this season with her at the helm. So if she is able to keep that same solid team and continue to implement her way of thinking and her coaching patterns, and it's going to be a very interesting move and interesting year for the Pies.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we have a great interview coming up now. We had a chat with Shimona Nelson from the Collingwood Magpies. She obviously has had a really, really solid season. And I mean, I think it's clear to everyone that connection that she has with Nicole Richardson and in turn Kate Upton too. And now we are very fortunate to be joined by Collingwood Magpies goal shooter Shimona Nelson. How's it going, Shimona?
I'm good, thank you. So you're back home.
Yeah, so you're back in lockdown at the moment. Obviously had to come back to hotel quarantine or quarantine of some sorts. How are you going with that?
Oh, it's been crazy. I'm not gonna lie, it's been crazy. So basically, we've been living in quarantine since we've left for Adelaide. So coming back home into another quarantine was like probably okay, but not so okay. And then having lockdown extended, so it's been crazy. I think probably the best part is just like me coming home to my partner and my cats and just like probably just being in my own space. I think that's how I got through the first bit of quarantine when I got back. So, yeah.
Gosh, that's a very long time. I'd forgotten about the whole quarantining process from Adelaide and all of that, and kind of that adds to that another chaotic season of travel and quarantine hubs. How do you cope with that as a playing group?
It was really hard. The uncertainty is what's happening. I think majority of us were under the pump of like a lot of frustration. Like it was very, very hard to like keep focus on what's happening because there's always something popping up that we're not aware of that we can't do or if we can do. So it was really hard to actually have a planned structure because, you know, as us athletes, we are very organized with our day. And, like, having that thrown out the window, it was very hard for us to actually catch on to what's happening.
And obviously that makes things very difficult, but it was still a really improved effort from the Pies this season. What were some of your kind of main takeaways, especially with that second half of the season?
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Like, I think probably we grew through the adversities together. I think probably like that built us, got us closer, and like that, you know, helped us to understand each other a bit more into hard times, like we're there for each other. And I think that transferred out on court as well. Like, it wasn't just like we're playing for the club anymore. It was just like more of we're playing for the club through how, like, our adversities that we've gone through. And like, we're going to have each other's back no matter what. No matter what you've thrown us at court, we're just going to do it to the best of our ability and just, like, have that little bit of fight for each other. So I think that's what the difference was from the half of the season.
And you touched on the fact that there was a lack of structure because of all of these changes and things like that. What did a stereotypical day look like for you and the Collingwood Magpies?
So, like, a normal day, like, for example, in season, like, for example, if we play on a Saturday, we'd have this Sunday off. On Monday, we'd have, like, last recovery massage or one-on-ones. On a Tuesday, we go to the gym. Wednesday, we have a court session. We have a Thursday off. Friday is a double session, so we do gym in the morning, then court. And then if we play on a Saturday or Sunday, we might have a captain's on a Saturday. If we play on a Saturday, we might have captain's on a Friday. But then, like, that got thrown out the window as soon as we got to Adelaide, so we're like always on our phone trying to get updates. Like, sometimes updates might change on the day when we have training. Like, we just had to like adjust to it immediately and be like, okay, let's just go with it.
Do you think it was harder this year or last year? Obviously last year you kind of knew what you were getting into, but it was still that unknown, whereas this year you knew kind of what could happen but had no idea around like the specifics.
This year is definitely harder, I'm not going to lie. Last year, we knew where we were going. We knew that it was going to be a condensed season. We knew that we could still have our typical training day, but not as often because we had to play during the week. This year, I don't know what happened this year, to be honest. Like, everyone's head was just all over the place. Like, COVID broke out in Sydney, then the Sydney teams had to move. Ourselves and the victims had to move, so it was like all over the place. Like, I don't think the team that moved as often had like a very good structure of, like, for example, a good training week. I don't think that the 14 that I had to move had a very like structure week to play.
Well, you personally didn't seem too fazed by it out on court. You looked a lot more confident and really gained some momentum towards the back end of the season.
I'd say because at the moment I was playing for the girls instead of myself because I was struggling and I'm not going to lie. Because I was like, I don't know what's happening and I'm like used to a structure. I'm quite organised with stuff.
Yeah.
So, like, not having a structure actually drove me crazy and just, like, being in the one space that's not your space was not really a good thing for me. But I was like, you know, like, everyone's going through the same thing. At the end of the day, we have a job to do. But the way how I look at it is that I'm going to play for the girls out there because we do need each other on and off the court. So I think that was my mentality throughout the rest of the season. Like, I know it was going to be hard, but like if we when we sat together, it didn't seem as hard.
And there were a lot of big changes through the midcourt last season, obviously, with injuries and swapping and changing and things like that. What was it like this season to have a steadier playing group, especially through that midcourt where you have quite a lot to do with them?
I think it was more organised and structured compared to last year, where we had a lot of disruption with players and stuff, and like we don't really know what the combinations are. I think this year we actually had the opportunity to start early, build on those combinations and like execute it on court. And I think through that, like us working through the off season on those little combination actually made a huge difference. And just like probably just understanding how each player plays and just like understanding them as a person. Because when it gets heated in the moment, they are going to say stuff, but then, like, it's based off professional feedback, not personal. So just getting to know those little bits about the girls actually helped heaps better.
You also had a new coach this year. You've got Richo at the helm. What's it been like having her around?
Richo, I'll say, like, I can't use words to express being around Richo, like, it's different because prior to me coming to netball, I've always had male coaches. So having a female coach that you can actually relate to is actually really good. And also Kate, it has been really good. Like, they express their feelings and, like, for me, that's something that I treasure. And, like, if a coach can do that to a player, then that player is going to go on court and deliver for them. And I think my relationship with Richo and Kate has built, like, tremendously over the past few months of beyond uncertainties. And I think that's where my respect and caring and honesty has gotten a bit deeper for them as coaches. And, like, being around them is good. But on court, that's a different story. They're quite, like, ruthless in a good way because they know what we're capable of. So if we're not getting it done, we're going to have conversations as to why it's not happening, and we're going to go out there on court, we're going to execute it again and again until it actually works. But if it's not working, it's easy to talk and be like, okay, look, it's not working, let's try this. And yeah, training sessions are the same. Like, it's hard, full on, have conversation. If it's not working, try something else and just keep going and, like, don't stop at all.
And it's been really lovely to see that connection grow between you and the coaching staff. But another connection that has grown is with Gabby Sinclair. Obviously, your main goal attack, that combination really developed at a rate of knots this season. What do you think changed from last season?
I think what changed last season for Gabs and I is that we actually made the effort in off season to work on our combination. So I think I only took off like 2 weeks of off season, and then I went straight into working and like getting my skills right, and Gabs was a part of that. And I think her and myself being able to get those combinations done, like worked on early, was a really good thing because, like, once we know preseason hit, we know where we stand together with the combinations and how we play and trust each other. I think us doing the work early helped us to, like, you know, build what we have so far and continue to build on what we have.
Well, that connection was firing on all cylinders against the Swifts. That game could go down as one of Collingwood's best performances to date. What was so special about that game?
To be honest, I don't know. I think we all, like, got quite fired up because a bit personal. Richo was a bit emotional that night before we went on court. So I think I was fired up by it. The girls were fired up by it. So I think that might be the ignition as to why we just, you know, we just let loose.
Well, it was great to watch, that's
and
for
I think
sure.
Also, like, we actually enjoyed playing netball. we enjoyed it, and like we loved the atmosphere that was on court that we built together.
Well, speaking about the game of netball as opposed to the team that you play with, who has been your toughest opponent, either SSN or international, whatever?
I'd say everyone, because you have to, well, I have to adjust my game based on how the goalkeepers play. Yeah. So I'd say they're all tough opponents, to be honest. Like, you can never actually be like, pinpoint and be like, okay, they're going to do this. Like, that's never, ever going to happen. Like, they're going to do that. Like, watching, like, videos and stuff, you're going to pinpoint one of the areas that they're going to do. But on a given day, you don't know. Well, I don't know what they're going to throw at me. And I, like, have to adjust in the moment, then and there, to do my job. Because if I don't, we don't make goals. So I have to, like, adjust to what they're doing, but still have in the back of my mind from the videos what they can do if what they're doing is not working.
Shimona, who's your tip to take out the premiership this season?
Oh, wee, that's a tough one. That's a very tough one. Oh, wee. I might say Fever and I might say Swift. I don't know. Like, when it comes, like, this year, we've seen, like, how much a team can stir up the competition. So it's okay. I don't know. I'll probably go with Leva.
What can we expect from you next season?
I think you can expect a better version of me as a player and as a person, because that's something that I genuinely want to keep building on, and like having, like, probably like 50-plus goals a game. But don't quote me just yet. I put in the work. So once I put the work in, work with my players out in front, I can definitely get that done. So, yeah, that'll be for me for next season.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
No worries, darling.
Thank you again to Collingwood Magpies goal shooter Shimona Nelson. Really, really great interview there. I especially loved when she was chatting about the coaching staff and the passion she has for those coaches in there, and especially hearing about how she's never had female coaches before this year. That kind of blew my mind.
Yeah, it was a really interesting little fun fact, I suppose, because I never really figured or factored it in from Shimona Nelson's point of view that this is the first time that she's had a female coach. So just the passion out on court, and you can see that camaraderie. Often when we go to games or things like that, you can see that Richo's out on court with Shimona Nelson, giving her little arm nudges here, there and everywhere to prep her for the game. So it was great to get that insight, and big thank you once again for her taking time out of her lockdown days to have a chat with us.
Absolutely. Well, we'll quickly head across the ditch now. We'll quickly touch on a couple of changes across the board there. There's been a lot of player movements over the last week. Obviously, the competition only finished a week and a half ago, so a few changes, Tay.
Yeah, there's been a heap of changes and some really exciting. So we know that Yvette McCausland-Drury has re-signed with the Pulse. So they had Gail Parata for this year and her tenure was not extended. So McCausland-Drury has made her way back to the Pulse. But interestingly enough, she will be without two stars in Amelia Ann Ecanasio and Katrina Rore, with the duo both not re-signing with the Pulse. So their signature is up for grabs, and it's going to be super interesting to see where exactly they go. And then if you look at the Steel, they've clearly re-signed George Fisher, friend of the show. We all love George Fisher over here. But they've also signed on Kate Burley and Xavier Tui, which is a really, really interesting move on their behalf, because I think this, the team that they're building, they're clearly aiming for finals, and why wouldn't you with the season that they've had? But Xavier Tui is another young gun who both you and I were really disappointed didn't get a lot of court time with the Mystics this year. So her joining the Steel is going to be a huge coup. And same with Kate Burley. This is another really interesting move, because for me, this must indicate that Phoenix Karaka must be coming back to full fitness or coming back as a full-time player. We saw her take the court a couple of times towards the back end of the season. So a really interesting move there. So two of them leaving the Mystics to join the Steel. So it's going to be interesting to see what else happens over there.
So Burley is taking the place of Tanisha Fifita, who is going on a religious mission. So she will not be playing for the other player that Taylor didn't touch on when she was talking about the Pulse was Tiana Metuaro. She is returning to the Pulse, taking up that goal attack position alongside Aaliyah Dunn, who is, I think, signed for her fifth year with the club, obviously started out as a real young gun and has kept her spot there. So that's really exciting, but definitely interesting to see, especially following that connection between George Fisher and Metuaro this season. It's sad to see that connection is going to be split up, but obviously Metuaro probably would have liked to stay with the Pulse in the first place. She only moved to the Steel to get more court time, and then turns out she probably would have had that court time at the Pulse because Ekenazio left. But something I want to pose here is where Ekenazio could potentially go. There's a lot of people throwing out the idea of potentially the Magic. I'd love to see her come back to Australia. Unlikely to happen given she's about to have another baby and she's obviously got her whole family in New Zealand, but like imagine if she came back over here.
Yeah, you're hoping that she comes over here to play for the Vixens. I can see that. That's written all over your head. It would be interesting. I think a few people, as you touched on, have thrown around the potential of her joining the Magic, which could be a really interesting move if she does partner up with someone like Caitlin Bassett. However, I do think it would be quite disappointing to think that someone like Kiana Williams then would not get enough court time. Yeah. And we've seen just how dynamic and exciting she can be. And given that the Under-21s World Cup was cancelled this year, this is an opportunity for young players to continue to get court time, and they need to be able to still grow and develop. So it's going to be a really interesting dynamic if she was to potentially sign with the Magic. I don't really know where she could end up, which is really hard because I'm looking at teams and I'm going, for me, a potential could be the Northern Stars.
Yeah.
If they're looking ahead to the World Cup, for example, you've got the likes of Maya Wilson, who 9 times out of 10 is going to be your starting goal shooter. And then let's be real, Ekenazio is probably going to be the starting goal attack if we're looking at an ideal lineup. So that is potentially a connection that they'll really want to foster, looking at someone like, you know, Nolin Tarua. She would potentially be trying to pull a few strings or whisper a few words of wisdom to make that connection happen, but it's going to be interesting. I personally would have thought that she just would have ended up at the Pulse again, but clearly not.
Yeah, it's especially interesting when you touch on Kiana Williams, and then if Ekenazio was to go to the Stars, and obviously that bumps out someone like Jamie Hume, who has also had a really good season. And then I kind of look at it and go, well, if Metuaro has left the Steel, then that leaves a goal attack position open that either Tui, who obviously we've already touched on, assigned with them, otherwise Williams, if she were to move, and same with Hume, if they were to move, they could have a real rotating circle there, which we all know the firepower that they're capable of. That would be hugely exciting, but again, we're just kind of posing questions because there's so much that can happen, we just don't know.
And that's the most exciting part, though, is that there are so many great players and there are so many spots up for grabs, and that competitive nature is exactly what you want to make sure that the competition is healthy, and that well and truly is happening over in the New Zealand over in the ANZ Premiership at the moment. The fight for spots is just ridiculous, and it's going to be super exciting to see what happens. Even questions about where potentially Rore could end up, you know, the options are endless.
Yeah, they really are. Well, I think we'll leave it there for this week's episode of the Centre Pass podcast. As always, leave us a message, leave us a comment, review, tweet us at CentrePassPod on Twitter, post on our Facebook, CentrePassPodcast. We'd love to hear your thoughts on potential movements, player movements, so SSN even though they haven't started yet. We just love to have a chat about netball. But thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you next week.